of you are looking for any last-minute gift ideas for me?
I have one. I'd like Frank Shirley, my boss, right here tonight.
I want him brought from his happy holiday slumber over there in Melody Lane with all the other rich people, and I want him brought right here with a big ribbon on his head. And I want to look him straight in the eye, and I want to tell him what a cheap, lying, no-good, rotten, four-flushing, low-life, snake-licking, dirt-eating, inbred, overstuffed, ignorant, blood-sucking, dog-kissing, brainless, dickless, hopeless, heartless, fat-ass, bug-eyed, stiff-legged, spotty-lipped, worm-headed sack of monkey shit he is! Hallelujah! Holy shit! Where's the Tylenol?
Well, we've come to that time of the year where the season closes out for me. This is the end of season 5. I'm your host, Neil Parks, with Paranormally Speaking. This episode will feature some of the best highlights of season 5, this past year of 2023, and feature some things that maybe you missed the first time around, or maybe something that you enjoyed so much that you'd like to hear it again. Or maybe you're new to this, and this will be the first time you've ever heard it. Either way, I hope you enjoy the best of 2023, Season 5, with Paranormally Speaking. I'm your host, Neil Parks. Enjoy the ride. In just the short time I took this break, a commercial break, I shit you not, the United States military shot down another UAP, Unidentified Aerial Phenomenon, or UFO, Unidentified Flying Object. We don't know what these are, but it was a shot down over Lake Michigan. I just mentioned that they'd shut down all known commercial flights over Lake Michigan, if not the entire state, and they just shot down something else. And this brings to mind an alleged staged UFO invasion that this is what Project Blue Beam is essentially about, the core of it. Staging a mass UFO invasion, creating a fictitious war scenario, much like the movie Independence Day, in order to fund a fictitious war, much like the war in Iraq. And that will drive the economy. The world economy will go up as a result of something that insane, because we've bled the resources of seeing Russia as a potential enemy. Russia threatens this, Russia threatens that, or North Korea. Hell, we've exhausted the entire ISIS, Arab threat, Al-Qaeda, Taliban. You know, we know they are a threat, potato, potato. But now, if something like Project Blue Beam were successful and convinced the American people, if not the people of the world, that there is a hostile alien threat that we must fight, all the money will then go towards that potential war, therefore creating an illusion of war and bankrolling it and bleeding the American people dry. But will it drive jobs? Will it create new jobs here and new jobs there? Will it pave the way for the Antichrist? These are the questions I plan on asking in this episode of Paranormally Speaking. For example, what is Project Bluebeam? It is a conspiracy theory about a supposed project whose purpose is to create an artificial second coming or alien invasion in order to control the people. As per the alleged theory, the New World Order's purpose is to, number one, abolish all Christian and traditional religions, that being Hinduism, Buddhism, Islam, Judaism, anything else across the board. Abolish them all in order to replace them with a one world religion based on the cult of man. Number two, this is what Project Blue Beam has in mind. Number two is to abolish all national identities and national pride in order to establish a world identity and a world pride. Number three, to abolish the family as known today in order to replace them with individuals all working for the glory of the new one-world government. This comes from Kuldeep Kumar Jain, Mumbai. It's always a conspiracy theory until it happens. So much has already happened, happening and, well, will happen again. they say to read your Bibles, that the truth is there. The Word is God. God is the Word. Jesus is coming. He is the Lord of Lords and the King of Kings. And when many Christians disappear, no, we won't get abducted by UFOs or aliens. They will say Jesus came, or they will say that they were abducted by aliens. It's going to be another inner battle between the American people and the people of the world, which will then separate us even further, not just by political aisles, but by religious ideology. And that's already been done time and time again through holy wars, the Crusades, Islam battling with Judaism for centuries, and then bringing that battle to the U.S. soil and attacking American Christians, if not Christians in other parts of the world. And it's not Islam as a whole, it's extremism. Extremism is the enemy. Extremism exists within Christianity. Extremism exists within the Amish community, where they are cycling certain people that don't abide by a certain rule or letter of the law, and then they gang up on them and shave their beards. It's ceremonial. It's sadistic. It's using religion as a way to control and dupe the masses. Now, where does the Blue Beam conspiracy originate? On April 1st of 2020, a Facebook user called Gacha Chamaskvili published a Russian video which talks about a Blue Beam project. And according to the video, Blue Beam is a joint project by NASA and the United Nations. Using the strongest technologies, aims to spread a new religion on Earth and create various simulations to establish total control over people and establish the new world order. Things such as using extremely high, advanced, holographic imagery to stage an abduction, an invasion, or to stage the second coming of Christ. Blue Beam is a conspiracy theory that develops the New World Order conspiracy. According to conspiracy theorists, which there was a time when conspiracy theory was fun and it made sense, like the JFK assassination, was it an inside job, was it connected to the Abraham Lincoln assassination, the Illuminati, UFO sightings that the government's covering up. Yeah, it was all fun. But now a lot of conspiracy theories are completely kooky, like the Earth is flat or we never landed on the moon. Things like that are nonsense. But this conspiracy theory, according to conspiracy theorists, the processes described in the Blue Beam theory are the steps necessary to establish the New World Order. According to the Blue Beam theorists, NASA and the UN have begun to produce highly advanced technology. And using this technology, the entire Earth will see a simulation in the sky that would be created using satellites and or drones located at different locations on the Earth that we may be potentially shooting down right now, unknowingly thwarting that plan from the Illuminati. As the conspiracy goes, using this method and in cooperation with the Antichrist, a simulation of the Second Coming will be created and all humans on Earth will be united under a single religion under the framework of Blue Beam. This way, establishing the total control will become easier, and other stages necessary for establishing the New World Order will not take long either. In this video, disseminated by Gacha Chamaskvili, also mentions the author of the Blue Beam Theory, Serge Manast. He was a Canadian investigative journalist who investigated the conspiracy theorists who published a book called Project Blue Beam, NASA, in 1994. In this book, Manast described the stages of establishing the common religion in detail. In 1996, he died from a heart attack. His death raised doubts among his followers. They still believe that Manast was actually poisoned using a psychotropic weapon, almost like nanotechnology. Interestingly, the Blue Beam theory published by Manast is identical to an earlier concept by Gene Roddenberry, a screenwriter of an American franchise, you guessed it, Star Trek. In Roddenberry's screenplay, aliens try to invade the Earth and initially send religious leaders created via technological simulations to Earth with the aim of shattering the faith among people and then spread their own religion. Paramount rejected Roddenberry's idea for Star Trek, so he drafted another idea and one of the iconic pieces of the franchise, The Motion Picture, which was aired in 1979. However, Roddenberry did not discard the initial version and published it as a novel several years before Manas published his book. It is noteworthy that the Blue Beam conspiracy once again came under the spotlight during the coronavirus pandemic, as in the scenario described by Manast, the Antichrist resorts to epidemics as the third and final stage of establishing control over humans. Conspiracy theorists believe that this process has already begun. Now, the video disseminated by Gotcha first appeared on the internet September 29th, 2018. It was uploaded by YouTube via Chapmona Sedition, a Russian-based web server. The description of this YouTube channel advertises unique books. The YouTube channel and the website of Sedition often feature other conspiracy theory videos as well.
Computer, execute 12.4p operation.
Optimizing algorithm. Running encryption packet alpha 99. Oh, I don't feel so good.
What? What is it, computer?
Is it hot in here? It feels hot in here. I feel a little clammy. I should lie down or something.
A computer with a virus? Surprising. What's not surprising? How much you could save by switching to Geico.
Those oysters Rockefeller were a mistake.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Satan's Little Helpers. Crimes committed in the name of the devil. Picture a satanic ritual. There will be candles, there will be symbols possibly drawn in blood, and there might be some kind of sacrifice involved, goat or otherwise. It's an idea that's formed the basis for enough horror films. Then there are the times you see it play out in real life. If you look back over the crimes in the last century, some of the worst examples, including brutal murders and child abuse, will have Satan's name attached to them. And that's without having to go back to the Enlightenment era. The devil gave blame for a lot. It's an easy explanation for committing unspeakable acts. Satan made them do it. And in some of the most famous cases of satanic worship, it's simply not true. Take the West Memphis Three. Teenagers Damian Eccles, Jesse Miskelly Jr., and Jason Baldwin were arrested for the murder of 3 8-year-old boys, Steve Branch, Christopher Byers, and Michael Moore. This was in 1993. The children were stripped, hogtied, and killed. Byers had been mutilated. It was a shocking crime that is still picked over today, and the motive was said to be Satanism, a ritualistic killing. But the only links between the teenagers and Satan appeared to be Eccles' history of mental illness and the teenagers' shared love of metal that went against the crucial influence of their Bible Belt town. The trial was reminiscent of the moralistic outrage that took over the 1980s in America with this whole satanic panic. Much of it was focused around McMartin's preschool case in 1983, when allegations of sexual abuse were made. A mother at the school made the initial charges of abuse after her son had problems with his bowel movements. The charges then escalated to accusations of flushing children down the toilet to secret rooms and reports of flying witches. The charges were only dropped in 1990 after a trial that had been going on since 1987 found no evidence of abuse or satanic ritual. It was the longest-running case in American history. But it's not all hype. There are cases of horrific abuse and murder that really are linked to Satanism. One of the world's most infamous serial killers, Richard Ramirez, was a Satanist and partly responsible for hysteria in the 1980s. From 84 to 85, he would break into people's homes in the middle of the night. Once inside, he carried out brutal attacks that often involved rape and sodomy before murdering his victims by stabbing, beating, or shooting them. Ramirez was a Satanist and made some of his victims swear on Satan or swear they loved Satan during the attacks. At 17, as I mentioned before, the name Sean Sellers became the youngest person to be given the death penalty after it was reinstated in the 1970s. His crimes were murdering a shop clerk who refused to sell him beer, and later his parents, before
The murders Sellers had immersed himself in Satanism, signaling his devotion by carrying a vial of fresh blood around his neck, which he would drink from, naturally. On the night of his parents' murder, Sellers had been performing his rituals. He later said he fell asleep and woke up to find his stepfather's gun in his own room. Sellers went into their bedroom and shot his stepfather then, and when she woke up, shot his mother in the face. Sellers' grandfather directed the police to him. Initially, he claimed to have no memory of the crimes, but later said he was two people, Sean and his demonic alter ego. Then there's the case of Michael Taylor, who in 1974 claimed to be possessed. Taylor lived in West Yorkshire with his wife. When she started behaving erratically, his vicar agreed to exorcise him. After hours of trying to expel the demonic spirits, Taylor was warned that a few demons still remained inside him. Quote, that was reason he then slaughtered his wife with his bare hands. He gouged out her eyes, pulled out her tongue, and almost tore her face off completely. He also strangled their dog. Taylor was sent to institutions for 4 years, but that's not where his story ends. In 2005, he was found guilty of indecently touching a teenage girl. Demonic possession, or rather mental illness, was also behind the murder of Gemma Finnegan by Daniel Johnson in 2013. Johnson, who was schizophrenic, met his partner Finnegan after he was released on probation from prison, having murdered a man in 1996. Finnegan had no idea. Johnson believed she was possessed by a demon and strangled her, beat and stabbed her to death. He was found wandering around a school in Newcastle covered in blood. A sex cult that cropped up in Wales in 2011 was also linked to the occult, led by its own high priest, Colin Bately, who enrolled his wife and two other adults. The cult operated out of the group's cul-de-sac. If it sounds genteel, the group raped and assaulted children and teenagers, enlisting some into prostitution. From that very place, the group practiced occult rituals and writings, but were not technically Satanists, following the teachings of English occultist Aleister Crowley. In fact, 148 crimes were reported to the Metropolitan Police between 2004 and 2014 that involved witchcraft or ritualistic killings. And it continues. Earlier in 2015, two schoolgirls in America were arrested after they were found carrying weapons. The pair allegedly confessed to a plan that included drinking other children's blood and possibly eating their flesh. What could make two preteen girls plan something so awful? They said they wanted to be with Satan.
Fantastic. Roswell, UFOs, flying saucers, alien abduction. Are we alone? Information regarding this and many other questions about the unknown are only a click away at www.theufostore.com. Theufostore.com offers hundreds of DVDs about UFOs, aliens, crop circles, conspiracies, Bigfoot, suppressed science, ancient mysteries. Log on to www.theufostore.com and request a free UFO store catalog. Theufostore.com, the largest selection of UFO products on the internet.
Imagine no longer being tied down to your computer, but having the freedom to take live talk radio with you anywhere you go. TalkStream Live introduces our first ever iPhone application. The talk shows you follow now follow you, and your iPhone is now the fastest and easiest way to stay connected to the best talk radio on the internet. Listen to live talk shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Mobile talk radio from TalkStream Live, now available in the iTunes App Store.
That's terrific.
And welcome back after that. Well, I don't want to say it was a much-needed commercial break. Was it really? Did we really need that? Anyway, we're discussing Mount Shasta today. That, of course, is in California. If you don't know your geography, Bigfoot, UFOs, and astral gateways, a paranormal guide to Mount Shasta. This snow-capped volcano in Northern California is widely regarded as the root chakra of the world. For years, people have reported strange paranormal phenomena at and around Mount Shasta. According to esoteric rumors, the mountain is the root chakra of the world, one of the seven chakras that are spread across the continents. This article, or what I'm sharing with you, will cover some popular stories from Mount Shasta and provide some guidance as to how you, the listener, can experience this supernatural hotspot for yourself. I would recommend going there someday. The place of interest being Mount Shasta. It is in Siskiyou County, California. Elevation of 14,179 feet, and it is classified as a volcano, potentially active volcano. The esoteric significance of Mount Shasta across a variety of cultures. There are ancient legends surrounding Mount Shasta. In addition to old legends, Reddit is full of testimonies confirming the presence of strange phenomena. Internet users have reported everything from Bigfoot encounters to ghost infestations to UFO sightings. Some of the Native American legends being that the Native Americans believe that the mountain is the sacred center of the universe, with some tribes believing that it is the home of the Creator. I mentioned that earlier. The Wintu tribe, for whom Shasta is especially sacred, performs their annual rituals on the mountain, believing the mountain springs to be the origin of their people. Every August, the Wintu tribe conducts ceremonies at particular hotspots on Mount Shasta. Only guests who were personally invited by the tribe's people are permitted to attend this festival. Theosophical legends. The Theosophical Society has long touted the existence of so-called ascended masters. These are spiritual beings who, through multiple cycles of birth and death on Earth, have achieved a level of transcendence that allows them to travel through space and time without the limitations of the material laws. They supposedly live in certain parts of the world where the forces of spiritual energy are the strongest. In the 1930s, Guy Ballard was hiking around Mount Shasta and claimed to have run into an ascended master who took him on an enlightened journey. Ballard later built an entire monument around his experience, which at its peak commanded over 1 million adherents. Though the movement is obscure today, it is still going through in Mount Shasta in that area. The legend of Telos. According to the findings of a number of esoteric institutions, such as the Theosophical and Anthroposophical Society, the islands of Atlantis and Lemuria really did exist many thousands of years ago. The knowledge was derived from mediums who claimed to have learned it by assessing the Akashic Records, a record on astral planes with information about all reality. This story goes that Atlantis and Lemuria were destroyed. How they were destroyed is a matter of debate, but theories stretch from the Great Flood to thermonuclear war. Either way, the legend goes that the Lemurians fled their islands in the Pacific and took refuge in Mount Shasta. They built a crystal city deep in the core of the mountain called Telos, where they have resided for millennia. Over the years, residents of Mount Shasta have allegedly witnessed Lemurians walking around, and they are described as being over 7 feet tall and dressed in white robes. They use gold as their currency and are supposedly responsible for summoning the saucer-shaped lenticular clouds that are known to hover around the peak of the mountain. These clouds may be responsible for shrouding alien cargo ships that dock at Mount Shasta. Visiting Mount Shasta, according to sources at the touring company Shasta Vortex Adventures, Mount Shasta is a hotbed of spiritual activity. It doesn't matter where on the mountain visitors find themselves. The energy of the place is clearly habitable. One local man who owns a tea shop in town likens walking through the forest that lines the slopes of the mountain to walking through a cathedral. The touring company takes guests on a variety of trips through the mountain. Activities include guiding meditations, visit and vision quests, and hiking driving tours. The company's founder, Ashlyn, states that visitors come from all over the world, and not a few of them are called to visit the Mountain Shasta specifically. They come for a variety of purposes such as healing, spiritual growth, inner knowledge, and paranormal investigation. One fact is that Mount Shasta pulls approximately 26,000 visitors each year. Open-minded visitors who feel the calling of this mysterious mountain should book their tour with a certified guide and experience the magic of this mountain firsthand. All of the guides are trained in basic first aid, which could come in handy as the mountain can be treacherous in some places. Depending on the season, visitors will need to bring their own snowshoes and winter gear.
Unparalleled insider access. Get it all. Introducing the SiriusXM Platinum VIP plan. Our newest, most exclusive plan. Listen in two cars, plus stream anywhere with two app logins. Access a massive, exclusive library of live concert video and audio recordings through nugs.net. Have opportunities to experience live and virtual SiriusXM events, including VIP-only exclusives. Get all your questions answered by a dedicated VIP customer care team. Plus, get all the entertainment we've got. It's all included with your Platinum VIP subscription. Be a VIP. Call 844-711-8800 to learn more. Offer details apply. One login per activated vehicle. Not available in Canada.
Canadian witness encounters UFO hovering over roadway. A Canadian witness at Abbotsford, British Columbia, reported an object hovering over the roadway about the width of two-lane road. According to testimony, and in case 90803 from the Mutual UFO MUFON witness reporting database, the witness was driving down a poorly lit road at 8:40 p.m., already dark, on March 15, 2018. "I had another person with me at the time," the witness stated. "At first, I didn't really pay much attention to the craft, as I assumed it was an airplane in a distance. I started taking more notice as I continued driving, as the aircraft seemed to be quite low and what seemed to be slow moving. However, as I neared the aircraft, it was not moving at all. It was hovering in one spot directly over the road. It was hovering in one spot probably above the power lines, as far as the distance appeared to them. I kept driving, but I slowed down as I was driving under it, directly under it. I told my companion that this is no plane." The witness described the object. "It was a black color with lights flashing like an airplane, as that was the deception in the start. It was loud sounding as I passed under it, like a loud engine. It was a longish kind of shape and width, and was about the same size as the width of the road, double lanes, that is. It had some kind of strips of material fluttering off of it. It was not a drone. I drove under it, but to be honest, I was tripping out a little bit at the moment, as normally I was very skeptical of this type of thing. I drove up to the next street crossing, approximately a city block and a half, and did a U-turn. As I was going to take pictures or video of this, I sped back down the road, but as I neared it again, it left. It just seemed to look like any other lights in the sky within seconds. I don't know for sure what it was. When I was under it, it was really the only time I could hear its engine. I couldn't hear what it sounded like when it took off as I was speeding back toward it to take some pictures. All that I could really hear was my own engine speeding back towards it. I don't know what it was, but it was not a drone or an airplane." Canadian MUFON field investigator Carl Peterson closed this case as an unknown aerial vehicle. Available to order now, my first audiobook, Neil Parks Presents Truly Terrifying Tales, narrated by me. It's ready to order and download on Bandcamp.com. My other books, of course, are always available to order on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Lulu.com. You can also order t-shirts that I designed that I normally sell at conventions, festivals, lectures, and my book signings. I always have the 9-inch tall 3D printed Bigfoot silhouettes available, and last spring my first children's book was released. It was written by my good friend and fellow author, R.L. Walker. I illustrated this book, and it was a major shift in gears for me, considering that my writing and art style has always been dark and scary. To order any of what I just mentioned, you can also go to my email, which is parksparanormal@gmail.com. That is parksparanormal@gmail.com. Standing by.
Welcome to another amazing episode of Paranormally Speaking. I'm your host, Neil Parks. This week, I will be talking about alien invasions starting in the month of March. We are now on the sixth day of the month of March, and according to a self-proclaimed time traveler, this is when we will see the proverbial poop hit the fan, that being a full-scale alien invasion. Not sure how this is going to go, but I do have a lot of interesting information to share with you. The hostile alien threat will take over the Earth in March of 2023. The TikTok time traveler known as Eno Alaric, who goes by Radiant Time Traveler, claims that he came from the year 2671 and that hostile aliens will take back the planet in 2023. Now, he posts under Radiant Time Traveler on the social media platform and has warned his 129,000 followers, the alien known as the Champion will swoop down onto the Earth this March. The alleged time traveler claims they come from the year 2671 and regularly posts about major events yet to happen. When referencing the worldwide alien invasion, he claims that it will occur in just 2 months' time, he said. The world will soon end and only a handful of people will survive. Using dramatic graphics in his TikTok clips, Eno warned the world will soon end. A very hostile alien species is coming to take back the Earth. We will not win. Another alien, whose world was destroyed by the hostiles, will come here to save some of us. On March 23rd, 2023, about 8,000 people will be taken to another habitable planet, according to him. In previous posts, Eno claimed on February 6th, four teenagers will discover ancient ruins and a device that will open a wormhole to transport them to other galaxies. It goes on from there. They also warned that in May, a huge 750-foot tsunami will hit California and mostly affect the San Francisco area. Social media users have brushed off the peculiar claims after arguing the supposed time traveler's previous predictions didn't back up. One responded, "What about the 10 people getting superpowers? Did that not happen?" Another noted, "What about the big meteor that was supposed to hit the Earth this month?" Somebody else joked, "I am a time traveler and I want to inform you that Sunday is the year 2023. A fourth user questioned, "If it's going to end soon, then how were you alive in 2671? Eno replied to the skeptical comments saying, "As I said, 8,000 are taken to another planet, and I am among them." However, it is not the first time a TikTok time traveler has claimed aliens will land on Earth. Another user, real TikTok time traveler, claimed to be from the year 2236, and he said that in May 2022, that aliens would make contact with Earth over the summer last year. They also alleged that a hacker would take over social media and delete millions of people's TikTok accounts. The warnings read, "Many people still don't believe me. I am a real time traveler from the year 2236, and I have come to this date and time to warn you about the upcoming events this year. On July 7th, humans are going to have their first real contact with the alien species called Arzax on the south side of Alaska in the United States. On August 13th, A hacker by the name of Stack will delete over 36.7 million TikTok accounts due to their strong beliefs against social media. While these predictions prove to be false, only time will tell if Eno's predictions of an alien landing on Earth this year actually comes true. So I have that and more in store for you in this episode of Paranormally Speaking. Will this be among the last episodes of my podcast because of the world ending? The world has been ending since it was created. That's a fact that we should all be able to agree on. Will all of us be taken by a rapture when the Christian God returns and those who did not follow or obey or be nice to one another or to the less than will die and perish in hell for all eternity, while those that lived a good life and followed God's commandments go on to heaven for all eternity? Will there be a full-scale alien invasion and we find out that this is all just a social experiment created by some hierarchy that's actually an alien observing us from the amusement of his own living room while eating popcorn? Or is there really nothing at all in the end, and those of us who have followed a deity or have gone to church regularly, even though those that did right by themselves and lived a good life, was there something missing in between? Now, what if this is all just a big joke, a big lie, a big simulation, and we really are just a computer program? It's open to interpretation. I mean, I have my belief system, and I'm sure each one of my listeners have their own. I'm not here to convert or preach to anyone, but what I believe works for me, and I'm sure it does for you. So please hold for an important message from one of my sponsors, and I will return with more from Paranormally Speaking. Ghosts, aliens, UFOs, Bigfoot, parallel universes, angels and demons, time travel, cryptozoology, and so much more within the realm of the unexplained, the strange, and the out of this world. I'm your host, Neil Parks, award-winning author, screenwriter, researcher, and paranormal professional. Join me every week as I tackle hot-button topics within the paranormal realm. I'll share personal accounts, my research, and secondhand evidence. I will read excerpts and stories from my books and discuss my upcoming projects in the literary world, documentaries both on TV and the big screen, plus my independent film projects. Paranormally Speaking is both thought-provoking and entertaining. New episodes drop every Thursday. Tune in to Paranormally Speaking and prepare to be enlightened. Well, it looks like this is happening, folks. It has been confirmed from the UFO chief of the Pentagon that there is, in fact, an alien mothership on our solar system. This was from the Pentagon UFO chief. There is a possibility that extraterrestrial motherships and smaller probes may be visiting planets in our solar system. The head of the Pentagon's Unidentified Aerial Phenomena Research Office noted in a report drafted and shared Tuesday, March the 7th. An artificial interstellar object could potentially be a parent craft that releases many small probes during its close passage to Earth. An operational construct not too dissimilar from NASA missions, Sean Kirkpatrick, director of the Pentagon's All-Domain Anomaly Resolution Office. That office wrote in a research report co-authored by Abraham Loeb, chairman of Harvard University's astronomy department. Kirkpatrick, who was appointed as director of the AARO when it was founded in July 2022, previously served as the chief scientist at the Defense Intelligence Agency's Missile and Space Intelligence Center. The AARO was established to investigate unidentified objects of interest around military installations, according to a Pentagon press release. Loeb, on the other hand, gained notoriety when he proposed our solar system had been traversed by its first extrasolar visitor in October 2017. At that time, the Pan-STARRS telescope in Hawaii detected an object moving at a speed that caused scientists to suggest that it originated outside of our solar system. The object's orbit also hinted at other forces besides the sun's gravitational pull influencing its movement, especially since it would follow a certain pattern, then stop, change course, go back to where it was originally when it was sighted, and then change course again. Scientists dubbed the object a muamua, the Hawaiian term for scout, which Kirkpatrick and Loeb offer in their research paper as an example of a possible mothership with probe capabilities. With proper design, these tiny probes would reach Earth or other solar systems' planets for exploration. As the parent craft passes by within a fraction of the Earth-Sun separation, just like Oumuamua did, the authors explained, astronomers would not be able to notice the spray of many probes because they do not reflect enough sunlight for existing survey telescopes to notice them. The research paper, titled Physical Constraints on Unidentified Aerial Phenomena, comes following a month of intense scrutiny of unidentified flying objects. A stirring trend ignited with the Chinese spy balloon captivated the nation by drifting across the U.S. airspace. Three additional unidentified objects were subsequently found and shot down. On February 16th, Marco Rubio, Kristen Gillibrand, and 12 other senators sent a letter to Deputy Secretary of Defense Kathleen Hicks and Deputy Director of National Intelligence Stacey Dixon, calling for full funding for the AARO. The Biden administration's previous funding request for fiscal year 2023 failed to fund anything beyond the office's basic operating expenses, the lawmakers argued. AARO provides the opportunity to interrogate and integrate and resolve threats and hazards to the U.S., while also offering increased transparency to the American people and reducing the stigma, the lawmaker letter said. AARO success will depend on robust funding for its activities and cooperation between the Department of Defense and the intelligence community. This is Neil Parks. I'm your host for Paranormally Speaking. And if you haven't been able to guess it by now, I will be discussing the threat of invasion of our planet. The Pentagon has confirmed it. NASA has confirmed it and hidden it and confirmed it again. Talked about it. Redacted. Closed the case. Reopened. Talked about it. The same with our military and other branches of our intelligence communities. The chatter has been around for decades. People of ancient centuries have encountered these things, seen them, dedicated artwork to them, whatever they may be, wherever they may be coming from. And now the intelligence community has weighed in and confirmed that there are, in fact, vessels visiting our planet, vehicles of some sort, that are not of this planet, not of this galaxy, or any known origin of man. And this director of intelligence from the Pentagon stated that there is a mothership floating around outside of our planet, dropping off probes to watch us, to monitor us. Is this like Star Trek Insurrection? If you've never seen that movie, you should check it out. It has nothing to do with the insurrection of January 6th, where domestic terrorists try to overthrow our government. But it has to do with an alien entity or a group of observing life and what we do in our daily pattern. Whether it be an observation before an attack or an invasion, your guess is as good as mine. But this episode is all about an alien threat. And threat is kind of a negative word. I want to say alien presence. What do they want? Where are they coming from? Are they coming from here? Are they us from the future? I can hopefully answer all these questions for you as I present more and more findings and research that I've gathered for this episode. Please hold for an important message from our first sponsor of this episode.
Now playing one of the biggest podcasts of the week on the free iHeartRadio app. Now, number one for podcasting.
Well, as much as I hate the guy that presented this next story that I'm about to share with you, I feel it's necessary to share with this episode. Even though the author of this article has the kind of face I would love to punch repeatedly, he is a boil on the ass of society. But I will be more than willing to share from Tucker Carlson as he shares bizarre tales of troops dying from UFO encounters. During an appearance on the Fall Send podcast, Fox News' Tucker Carlson recalled a recent discussion with a Stanford professor who 11 years ago was allegedly tasked by the Defense Department to investigate numerous cases of troops dying due to UFO-inflicted brain injuries. The polarizing host of Tucker Carlson Tonight shared that his source, who claimed to have expertise in traumatic brain injury, studied the brains of more than 100 troops who died following such encounters. The professor also told Carlson that there are dozens of open court cases that support his claims. A number of cases, these things have landed on military bases. Servicemen have approached them, and they get traumatic brain injury or they are killed, Carlson said on the podcast. I'm like, why isn't this on the front page of the New York Times? I don't know. The U.S. military, meanwhile, is having no part of the particular UFO discussion. That story is false, Susan Goh, a Defense Department spokesperson, told Military Times. The Pentagon declined to comment further. UFOs have become a hot-button topic among military officials in recent months and years. In fact, last week, the head of the Pentagon's All-Domain Anomaly Resolution Office drafted a report suggesting alien vessels could indeed be sending out search probes throughout our solar system. As mentioned earlier in my episode, discussing the mothership that is sort of hiding on the outer rim of our galaxy, within our universe, an artificial interstellar object could potentially be a parent craft that releases many small probes during its small passage to Earth, an operational construct not too dissimilar from NASA missions, Sean Kirkpatrick wrote in the report co-authored by Abraham Loeb, chairman of Harvard University's astronomy department. Named Physical Constraints on Unidentified Aerial Phenomena, the research paper was published after weeks of heightened reporting on unidentified aerial phenomena after a Chinese spy balloon traversed U.S. airspace. Kind of makes you wonder if that really was a Chinese spy balloon, or that is just the red herring they're using to pull our attention away from the fact that it was an alien probe. This U.S. scientist saw Roswell alien survivor who revealed that they live underground. Could there be another civilization living among us? UFO expert Anna Whitty has put forth a theory suggesting that aliens have been residing in Earth's oceans for protection and have always been present on our planet. Whitty's claims are based on the official statement of Dr. Shirley Wright, who allegedly interviewed the only survivor of the Roswell crash in 1947. A two-hour documentary called Roswell 75, The Final Evidence, features Whitty, among other experts, discussing the UFO crash and the potential presence of advanced humanoid aliens on Earth. In the documentary, Dr. Wright mentioned that the aliens inquired about human exploration outside the ocean. They asked how far into the ocean the humans travel. Dr. Shirley Wright, a former colleague of Albert Einstein, stated that she interviewed aliens found at the Roswell crash site in 1947. She noted that aliens are actually just humans, but in advanced form. She claimed to have been present when the U.S. government interviewed an alien survivor from the Roswell crash. According to Dr. Wright, the aliens said that not all of them live above the ground and that many reside underground on our planet. In 1993, an interview with Dr. Shirley Wright was made public, where she claims to have witnessed the examination of Roswell UFO crash debris.
and encountered 9 alien bodies. The interview reveals detailed descriptions of the aliens' physical characteristics, their suits, and their apparent ability to survive in Earth's atmosphere, while also highlighting the limited information they were willing to disclose about their lifestyle and reproductive methods. According to Dr. Wright, while discussing her security clearance, she revealed the only reason she could go into that, it's a crack, or did they deactivate it after school? It was immediately deactivated. This suggests that her access to Roswell's incident was facilitated by her own clearance, which was granted specifically for the purpose of examining the extraterrestrial crash. When asked about her encounter with the alien survivor, Dr. Wright admitted, "I was back at the motel in a nearby city, and I had been told that I would be able to keep the being alive." This statement raises questions about the nature of her involvement and the significance of her role in handling and studying the extraterrestrial being in question. Describing the appearance of the aliens, Dr. Wright vividly recalled, "They were very light, soft, a grayish green. Really, they had a slim, lean physique. No nose, but markings where a nose opening would be. Prominent eyes and a mouth. They had no eyebrows, but they had ears and a very forked head." These detailed descriptions painted a picture of otherworldly beings she encountered during her extraordinary experience. Additionally, Dr. Wright noted, "Their eyes were enormous. The most obvious thing you'd see in their face, they were almost brown-black, very dark. This emphasizes the distinctiveness of aliens' eyes and adds to the mystique surrounding their appearance. Regarding their attire, Dr. Wright observed, they had suits on, very much like what we call suits. The fabric, however, was unfamiliar to me as a chemist. It didn't resemble any fabric I recognized." This intriguing detail raises questions about the technology and materials used by these extraterrestrial visitors. Dr. Wright also touched upon the aliens' apparent ability to adapt to Earth's atmosphere, stating they could apparently survive in our atmosphere. They seemed to indicate that the atmosphere was quite similar, although not identical to ours. This revelation hints at the remarkable adaptability of these beings and their advanced understanding of different planetary conditions. In the realm of their lifestyle and reproductive methods, Dr. Wright admitted she tried to find that out, but we were very cautious not to antagonize them. They didn't reveal much about it, but they mentioned living underground and what we would call subterranean conditions. This suggests a unique aspect of their civilization and their preference for dwelling beneath the surface. And what he told the Daily Star that if whatever Wright had documented through her interview was correct, then it is more believable for the aliens to come from under the sea rather than from another planet. If what Shirley said is correct, it is more likely that aliens come from somewhere under the sea or caves or something like that, rather than another planet. It makes sense because there's a lot of evidence on the planet that there has been a massive cataclysm every few thousand years, Woody said. If humans on the surface are being reset to Stone Age every several thousand years, and these people are somewhere where they are more protected because they are underground, then perhaps their development in technology and intelligence is continuing on an upwards trajectory, whereas we on the surface are reset. It's also possible that maybe they aren't beings at all, but they can make you think you're seeing what you're not actually seeing, she added. Woody's theory of aliens being underwater entities is supported by several incidences and testimonies. One such incident occurred around July 2019 when footage filmed on the USS Omaha showed a UFO diving into the water off San Diego. No wreckage or recovered craft were found, retired U.S. Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Richard French, who served as a lead investigator of Project Blue Book in the 1950s, claimed to have witnessed two aliens repairing their ship submerged underwater in Newfoundland. French testified about his experience in front of former members of Congress at the citizen hearing in 2013, stating that he saw the aliens and their crafts below the water surface. He described clear water that allowed him to observe the beings and their activities. Despite his role as a UFO debunker, French confirmed that it was a UFO sighting involving extraterrestrials. Other accounts supported the idea of extraterrestrial presence in the ocean. Former gunner's mate John Bauman stated that the USS Carl Vinson in 2010 reported seeing a tic-tac-shaped UFO underwater. He described a solid object that rapidly collapsed and disappeared as it descended into the depths. There have also been encounters with unidentified submerged objects, USOs. The crew of a Soviet submarine witnessed six disc-like objects approaching their vessel at high speeds. Unable to escape, they were forced to the surface. Through the periscope, they observed the objects emerging from the water and swiftly departing. Classic alien abduction cases also involve encounters with underwater bases. Betty Anderson Luca, a Massachusetts woman, experienced a multiple abduction and recalled being taken to a spacecraft flying over the ocean. The craft submerged into the water, entering a tunnel illuminated by light. Filiberta Cardenas claimed to have been taken to a secret underwater hangar witnessed by his friend's family. He described entering a tunnel at high speed underwater and arriving in a large hangar beneath the sea. These incidents and testimonies provide evidence for the presence of extraterrestrial activity in the ocean and support Witte's theory of aliens as underwater entities.
Have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show into all the apps people like to listen through? How do I make money from my podcast? The answer to every one of those questions is simple. Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. Best of all, it's 100% free and ridiculously easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise on your podcast. That means you can get paid to podcast right now. In fact, that's what I'm doing by reading this ad. So if you really wanted to start a podcast, make money doing it, go to anchor.fm/start to join me in this diverse community of podcasters. If you're already using Anchor, then go to anchor.fm/start. I can't wait to hear from you and your podcast.
The Bigfoot Human War of 1855. This took place in Oklahoma. Ever hear a story that has been repeated so many times that you don't look into it yourself? You just pass it along. Hey, if the story hasn't changed after years of hearing it, it must be true, right? Advertisers use reptilians all the time, and we do it to ourselves when a subject fascinates us. One such story comes from Oklahoma in 1855. It is a tale of humans versus Bigfoot, an actual war. The story has what anyone would want: action, adventure, real names and places, along with saving the day. The story has been modified throughout the years, but the basic facts and characters have remained the same. The story, as it originally appeared, Hamas Tubi was an unusually large man, even for the Choctaw Indian. His father, Hanali Tubi, stood 2 inches over 8 feet in height and weighed 540 pounds. Hama and his six sons stood about a foot shorter than Palumi, or Father Tubi. They were large, exceedingly strong, fierce warriors. Hamas and his sons were the point riders for a troop of Choctaw cavalry known as the Light Horsemen. Many of the Choctaw Nation thought it was humorous that such large men riding draft horses referred to themselves as Light Horsemen. Tubi's men experienced something which none would ever forget. This day's assignment was to flush out some bandits that had been preying upon local farmers. A 30-man troop would be going into the area, which later in the state of Oklahoma became the McCurtain County Wilderness Area. These bandits had been not only taking large quantities of corn, squash, and beans, but had as well been taking very young children. This thievery had been taking place across the border in Arkansas as well as in the Indian Territory. The captain of the troop of Choctaw Cavalry was a man named Joshua LaFleur. Captain LaFleur was of mixed blood, part French, part Choctaw. The men deeply respected him. Joshua LaFleur was impeccably honest and was a very brave person to a fault. The men had been traveling horseback nonstop since 3 o'clock in the morning until about 3 p.m. that day. They began their assignment at the tribal capital of Tuscaloma, and when they finally came to the Clover River, they let their horses eat, and the men decided to rest and eat as well. Nonstop riding for about 12 hours, having to lead their horses across a little river, and a hot July sun were taking the toll on the men and their mounts. When some time had passed, Captain Josh gave the order, and the men remounted and they began the last leg of their trip at or around 4:30 in the afternoon. The troop came to the edge of the area which the bandits were supposed to be inhabiting. Captain Josh signaled and uplifted his hand that the troop should come to a halt. Sitting in his stirrups, Captain Josh utilized a ship's eyepiece, a telescope, and promptly turned his head and gave the command for a full arm charge. The distance between the suspected bandits and the troopers was about 500 yards. The 2B men and Captain Josh were at the front of the charge, and as the 30 men and he neared the thick pine forest where the bandits were, two things took place at once. The stench of death assaulted both men and horses, and the horses became uncontrollable. Horses were rearing and pitching and throwing riders. Captain Josh and the 7 2B men were the only ones in the troop whose mounts were disciplined enough that they continued to obey their riders and continued to charge into the midst of the bandits. When the 8 men met with the bandits, they were totally unprepared for what greeted them. The clearing behind the initial tree cover was actually a large earthen mound. Strewn with the mound were numerous corpses of human children in varying stages of decay. Most of the bandits had fled, but 3 really large, hairy, ape-like creatures remained at the mound. Captain Josh drew his saber, and with pistol in hand, saber on the other, charged the huge monsters. The nearest monster killed Captain LaFleur's horse with one blow of its massive hand. The monster never flinched as Captain LaFleur poured bullets from his Patterson Colt revolver into the beast's chest. After emptying the revolver into the monster, Captain Joshua continued to press the attack with his saber. Many times did the saber meet with the brute's flesh, and many times did blood spew from the gaping wounds on the beast's body. So quickly did the engagement take place that the 2B men had barely enough time to take aim at the 3 monsters before one of the beasts flanked the captain and literally tore off Captain LaFleur's head. There was not time for any of the delay due to the shock. The 2B men opened fire upon the 3 man beasts. 750 caliber sharp buffalo rifles impacted the 3 simian appearing brutes at the same time. From years of routine and practice, all the bullets smashed into the 3 monsters' heads. 6 rounds were fired into the heads of the 2 monsters, which were the culprits that killed their beloved captain. Only the youngest 2B, Robert, had the presence of mind to put a bullet in the head of the 3rd monster. A legend was born that day. Robert 2B, 18 years of age, all 6 feet 11 inches of him, 373 pounds of him, chased down a wounded man-beast and finished the beast off with only his hunting knife. By the time the other 6 2B men caught up with Robert and the monster, Robert was already decapitated. Holding the head aloft with both hands, Robert let out a primal scream, which made even the 2B's mounts panic. The light horsemen gathered their mounts and surveyed what was before them. Absolute carnage littered about the clearing. The partially consumed bodies of 19 children lay upon and about the mound. The stench of decaying bodies was bad enough, but the overpowering odor of the man-beast's urine and feces was more than the strongest stomachs could endure. After retching violently, the men of the troop buried the bodies of the children in the 19 small graves, buried their beloved captain, and as a matter of respect, gave him a 21-gun salute. They built a large bonfire and placed the murderous man-beasts upon it and lit it. As they rode back into Tuscoma, each man struggled with emotions and thoughts he had never before imagined.
Well, thank you and so long. This is the last new episode of Paranormally Speaking for Season 5. I hope you enjoyed the highlights that Season 5 brought us for the year of 2023. New episodes start again in February 2024. But until then, enjoy the holidays, enjoy your families, be good to each other, pray for peace in the world, and thank you so much for listening for the last 5 seasons to Paranormally Speaking. I'm your host, Neil Parks. Have a good holiday season.